Welcome to Minute 2 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob.
I'm Tom.
This week, we don't have any guests, so it's just the two of us to be able to talk about the first few minutes of this movie. Minute 2, it continues with the credits of the movie. So it starts off with a music credit for Elmer Bernstein. And it takes us all the way to the credit for John Sturges, who both produced and directed this movie. So what did you think about this this minute, Tom?
You know, we get more of this opening shot where we kind of continue the caravan, and we get basically the rest of the credits for the film, which is still, to me, kind of crazy how few credits there are, because I'm so used to modern movies where you'll get 5+ minutes of credits that just are scrolling at a ridiculous rate that you're not even going to be able to read them. But like I said yesterday, that this opening is fantastic, and there's a couple of people here that we see in the credits I'd like to talk about.
But right. I mean, we might as well try to go a little bit in order.
Yeah.
We might as well start with Elmer Bernstein.
Yes. He is number 2 on AFI's top 100 greatest American film scores. So when I was looking at him, he's got, on that list, he's got 2 entries. He is second only to John Williams. Neither of those entries are this movie, but, you know, just the fact, you know, that just shows how great of a music director he is. I mean, he did the music for Magnificent Seven, True Grit, the original with John Wayne, Kill a Mockingbird. He did the Ghostbusters music, which I hadn't thought about.
Was that one of the two that made the list?
No, the two that made the list, well, I mean, Ghostbusters probably should have, but Magnificent Seven and To Kill a Mockingbird, I believe, are the two to make the list. And then he also did Ten Commandments and the old Disney Black Cauldron movie were some of the highlights I saw of his.
Yeah, I mean, on IMDb, he has 144 credits for movies. I mean, that's just amazing, especially given the fact that he died at 82, but he still just did a lot of voicing work over the years for movies. And, you know, as you mentioned, he's just done so many iconic scores over the years. There's no question about that. I mean, he did the Ten Commandments, which I think I recall him actually saying that was one of his favorite scores that he worked on. Hmm. I could be wrong about that. I think I recall hearing that. Yeah, there's something about if I remember correctly, it has to do with you know, he enjoyed working with Cecil B. DeMille so much that for him it was just amazing to work with someone who was able to give him so much free rein in the way that he wanted to score things.
Yeah, and I believe some of those more epic films just give, you know, some of the behind the scenes people, including, you know, the music director, just so much free rein and the ability to just play and see what they want to do and what works, and also use a wide range of musical styles and different themes in the music. And I am not a music person, so if any of you all are and are yelling at me because I'm using the wrong terms, I'm sorry, but when it comes to music, it will continue to happen.
We are actually going to have a guest later on who's going to be discussing all the musical aspects of the film. So I'm looking forward to that. We got a long way till we get there. And, you know, the goal is to get there, obviously. One of the things that we wanted to discuss that we didn't discuss yesterday, the fact that for anyone who doesn't know what a Movie by Minute podcast is, it's actually something that was started a while back, I think about a decade ago, by Adam and Brad of Gutterballs, who did Gutterballs TV. They're the first podcasters to actually analyze a movie 1 minute at a time. And then came along Pete and Alex of the Star Wars Minute. So anyone who's familiar with their work know who they are. And they're the ones who made it into a daily format, and also were able to make this into what it is. I mean, right now, I think as of today, there are over 180 different podcasts that analyze movies minute by minute. I can speak for Tom here, and we're both glad to be a part of this community. I mean, the people in the community have been so helpful in helping us get started here. Some of the people in the community will be joining us as guests over the next few weeks and months. So obviously we want to thank all those people, especially Adam, Brad, Pete, and Alex for getting this started and getting us interested in this type of format.
Yes. Without those guys, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure at some point it would have happened, but I don't know if it would have had the success it's had or the following it's gotten without, you know, those guys starting off with, especially Pete and Alex, was such a major film franchise that they clearly love.
Yeah, and they're still going strong after, what is it, 8, 9 seasons? Something like that. So,
yeah, I think they're doing The Last Jedi right now.
Yeah, right now they're in the middle of The Last Jedi. So it's a lot of fun listening to that every day also. But we should be talking about our movie.
Yes.
Not theirs. But even though we like their movie, I actually love their movies. But yes. So after Elmer Bernstein, we have the director of photography, Daniel Fapp. Daniel L. Fapp, excuse me. Who also had such a storied career. I mean, he was a cinematographer on 79 movies in his career. And besides The Great Escape, he also did West Side Story. He also did a few other John Sturges movies, Ice Station Zebra, Marooned. He did Our Man Flint. He actually was nominated for 7 Oscars over his career. And he won for his work as cinematographer on West Side Story just 2 years before this movie came out. So again, the production of this movie, they just really were able to get some stellar people both in front and behind the cameras doing some amazing work here. Do you have anything to say about him?
Not about him, but I did look at Ferris Webster,
okay,
who did the editing, and he's got 78 editing credits. Now, most of these I haven't seen, considering I would say well over half of these movies are pre-1960, you know, but he did the original Manchurian Candidate, which, you know, is considered one of the best films, and so, you know, just more people that, like, oh, okay, we're just going to get everyone who seems to have been anybody in 1963 to get on board and make this movie. And it's just something that, I mean, maybe could happen now. I guess the closest thing we have is some of the Marvel Avengers movies where you get anybody who's anybody to make a film. But even it just doesn't have the same gravitas, I feel, like some of these movies do. I don't know what your thoughts on that, Rob, are.
Right. Well, first of all, with the whole idea of the MCU, it's a little different because the MCU, the idea is getting different directors to give us their perspectives on the various characters and stuff like that. It's not like here where it's all of these talented people are working on the exact same film. One of the interesting things looking at his filmography is that pretty much through the last decade and a half of his work, just about every one of his movies was a Clint Eastwood movie. You got Honky Tonk Man, Firefox, Any Which Way You Can, Bronco Billy, Escape from Alcatraz, Every Which Way But Loose, The Gauntlet, The Enforcer, A La Josie Wales, The Iger Sanction, Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, Magnum Force. It just seems as if, you know, it seems as if he became really good friends with Clint Eastwood and took on all of his movies at the end, which, you know, I guess it paid off.
Yeah.
He was nominated 3 times for Oscars in his career. One, as you mentioned earlier, was for this film, also for Manchurian Candidate and for The Blackboard Jungle, Sidney Poitier in 1955. So, I mean, that's just someone who really has a lot of credits under his belt. I mean, in The Blackboard Jungle, I mentioned Sidney Poitier, but it was mostly Glenn Ford. I mean, that's a movie that I've always enjoyed. If anyone hasn't seen that one, you should take a look at it also.
I don't think I've seen that one.
It's basically about a teacher who in an inner school high school and how he deals with his students and how he deals with – it's the way teachers deal with their students back then, which ironically, even after 70 years or close to 70 years, not much has really changed.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Okay, so as we're continuing through the credits here, so we deal with the fact that this is based on a book by Paul Brickhill, Now, Paul Brickhill was actually one of the POWs who was in this real camp. As we've mentioned before, and most people probably already know, this is actually based on a true story. A lot of the people who were part of the true story or who were relatives of the true story are I wouldn't necessarily say that they're the happiest about the way that this movie was made, because you know, from their perspective, they should have made the story about the real people and not fictionalize a lot of the characters and change things around to get more people to come into the box office. At some point in the future, we're going to have a week where we're going to actually talk with some people who will tell us about the real story of this movie and the differences between the film and reality. But Paul Brickhill in 1950, he was part of the early stage of the escape, but he was actually transferred to another prison before the escape actually happened. So he wasn't part of the escape itself, but he knew, just about everybody who took part in the escape. So he wrote a book about it, and, for many years he was, there were a number of people that were trying to get his book, made into a movie, and, they eventually were able to do so. And the screenplay was actually written by James Clavell and W. Arnett. So they took the ideas from the book by Brickhill and translated it into something that would be really exciting to see on the screen. Again, I'm not saying that the real story wouldn't have been exciting to see on the screen. I guess once it got into the hands of these two great screenwriters, you know, they Hollywoodized the story.
I know years ago I actually read his book for, I think I was in middle school at the time. And at the time I remember being disappointed in the book because of how much I loved the movie and the fact that the book was not so different, but it just, you know, it's a true-to-life story. It doesn't have all of the, oh, we can expedite this scene so that things flow faster and are more exciting. But I reread it a couple of years ago as an adult, and I found, oh, wow, this is fascinating. Because of, you know, basically for the same reasons I found it so boring when I was a kid, that, oh, this is an awful lot of work and planning, and it's almost more interesting than the movie because you get some of that, well, this took months and months and months to do versus, yeah, it all happened over the course of, you know, what appears to be weeks in the movie.
Yeah, this movie truncates the story a lot. There's no question about that. I mean, we'll be discussing that in the future. Also, the fact that also the date of the escape is very different. Also, the date of the escape actually was in March. And if I remember correctly, it actually was on Steve McQueen's birthday.
14th birthday, I think it was.
Yes, because it was 1944, and he was born in 1930. So, yes, it was on March 24th. 1944 was when the real breakout was. But the movie, for theatrical reasons or whatever, decided to do it in the summer, you know, which is one of the reasons why we're now doing this, you know, in the summer, because it's connected to when the movie at least depicts the breakout took place.
The fact the movie came out on the 4th of July, it seemed fitting. We get start this right about that same time, obviously, with the way the correct calendars were. We weren't going to push it off another year. But
No. Okay, and so then the final credit in this minute is the credit for the producer and director, John Sturgis, who also, as we've mentioned with so many other crew members, he just had a storied career also. I mean, he had, as a director, he directed 43 movies over the course of his career. In my opinion, this is his best film. He was nominated for an Oscar in 1955 for his work on Bad Dad, Black Rock, which was also a great movie, but I still think this one's better. That was a movie with Spencer Tracy. That was also a post-war film about a one-armed man who comes to a town, and you don't really know what he wants and what he's looking for. So he did a great job with that movie too. And I can understand why he would have been nominated for an Oscar for it. But as we mentioned earlier, he also did The Magnificent Seven. He did Die Station Zebra, Marooned. He has a few movies that he did with John Wayne. He also, his final film credit was in 1976. When he directed The Eagle Has Landed, which is, again, another World War II movie. When you have Michael Caine, Donald Sutherland, Robert Duvall, Donald Pleasance was there again. But yeah, he had a great career. And, you know, anyone who's seen this movie knows that he did a great job putting this all together, because it's such an enjoyable and such a fun movie to watch, even after nearly 60 years.
Yes, he did very well. Yeah. Fantastic job here. There is one other person that we kind of skipped over I'd like to at least mention, Paul Pollard. He was in charge of the special effects for this movie, and he's another one. This is actually one of his earliest movies. He did a couple of TV series, and then this was his fourth feature film. But along with this one, he did the special effects for The Manchurian Candidate, again, the original. He did the special effects for Outlaw Josie Wales. He's got 23 credits, so not necessarily the same iconography that some of the other members did, but I thought the special effects in this movie are fantastic, and he did a wonderful job here. I just wanted to give him a shout-out as well.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, you said everything that can be said, that needs to be said. So you got anything else for this minute?
I do not.
All right. So anyone who wants to get in touch with us, you can rate, review, and subscribe. We have a Facebook group, The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. You can contact us on Twitter at greatescapemxm. And our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. So we look forward to having you join us tomorrow on The Great Escape, Minute by Minute. Tally-ho!
Tally-ho!